Kia ora, it's a whanau. You have just tuned into RDU 98.5, where we have a politician on this morning, Chloe Swarbrick. How are you doing?
Kia ora, thanks for having me. I'm doing all right. Ototahi's got it going on.
Do you truly reckon Ototahi's got it going
on? I truly do, actually. I was just texting a mate about how good Ototahi is. Yeah, I mean, look, I can't lie. I'll be completely honest. Obviously, I'm the MP for Auckland Central. But I think... Yeah, I've got some good mates that live down here, and you guys have quite a unique music scene, and I think there's some real cool hospo and spots that came out of people just innovating and doing stuff, particularly post-earthquake. Yeah, and obviously the art scene here is so freaking resilient, which is not to say that it should be without government support, but I'm sure we'll get into that yarn soon enough.
Totally.
Yeah, and I also had the privilege of going to the Scrolls the other night as well, and a mate of mine was like, this is the most bogan Scrolls I've ever been to, and I was like, ups, all to say.
The funniest part is I was at the Scrolls too, and yeah. I thought, damn, this is pretty bogan, but it had a special eclectic Ototahi factor. A little bit of something going on. Oh, no. Well, that's a great starter into it. But my genuine first question for you is, as a politician, what's a value that you hold closest to you?
Good question. I would say that probably the thing that I have found the most important as like my guiding star the whole time that I've been doing politics is integrity. I think that there is a really unfortunate general belief out there in the public that, and it's kind of proven true frequently, that politicians suck and don't do what they say they're going to do, or constantly chop and change depending on, you know, the polling or the focus grouping or whatever. And I think that it's much like that classic adage that you get the love that you think that you deserve. I think we get the politics that we think that we deserve. And guys, the bar has been too damn low for too damn long.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up with this kind of self-fulfilling prophecy where we just kind of expect that politicians are going to suck and are going to lie to us. And while I think that, you know, being honest and like therefore wading through the complexity of the challenges that we face and maybe putting on the table stuff that is a little bit difficult to contend with because, you know what, it is going to require some quite substantial societal and economic transformation if we are to attend to the issues of our time. I think that that's a far more rewarding pathway, right? Because while it comes with potentially quite a lot of hate to begin with, some of my favourite conversations are with people who think that they will hate me because, you know, you're straight off the bat and into it. You know, some of the most honest conversations you'll ever have.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have the opportunity to just be a little bit curious and kind of ask people why they think the way that they do. And, yeah, I think a really fascinating thing about the way that our society is operating at the moment is that a lot of us haven't really necessarily thought all too deeply about how we've come to hold the positions that we do.
Mm.
So anyway, I think for me, the value that I hold to the most to actually answer your question is, integrity. I think that being able to say that you did the best that you could with the resources and the information that was available to you, is really important to me.
Nah, totally. And that actually
Which means I'm not closed to critique, by the way.
Yeah,
if anyone wants to have a go at me, but come at me.
No, but you've got to. I think especially in your position, you kind of become a dartboard for, you know, positive and also a lot of negative. But I guess you have to embrace it if you want to be in a position of power and really get up there and,
it's,
you know,
so
speak.
Buzzy. Because I mean, even that point, and you're like so right, because this is, I think, something that the left is currently having to kind of reconcile with is, you know, we've spent 10, 15, 20 or so years in the kind of wilderness, which has been brought about, I think, by, you know, the capitulation of particularly centre-left political parties to kind of the right, where they haven't, again, attended to yawning inequality and instead of like put this veneer of equality by virtue of affirmative action programs and kind of placing marginalized communities into these ostensible or supposed positions of power without actually changing the power structure or actually redistributing resources, which kind of leads me to the conclusion that anything other than redistribution of resources is just tokenism. But, you know, we kind of just, again, like land in this place of the craziest thing about my role and how I've ended up here is that I just had this very earnest belief that we could like do better, and somehow I'm now the co-leader of the third largest political party in the country. But like, I very strongly believe that my job is not just like ask people solely to believe in me or to believe in our political party. I'm asking people to believe in themselves and to believe in our communities and to believe in the things that we can create together. Because, yeah, I guess to your point, or your question rather, of values and like guiding star and stuff, I think if we are to genuinely understand how power works, then, and how we can change society, then we need to look beyond the 3-year electoral cycle and we need to rebuild power in our communities. Anyway, I'll shut up.
I was honestly just letting you go because that was great.
We're doing a podcast.
This is actually a podcast. No, but you've segued really well into the next question that I wanted to ask you, because, you know, criticism, you know, being a politician, it can get pretty volatile and it can get quite aggressive. How have you been able to manage it from when you first started out in your career to now? Like, what has that been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I was a baby, eh? Like, who let that child into parliament to make laws? I am very, very lucky to have friends who really do create space for me outside of the bluster and the nonsense. And I guess just to give like a sense of context and feeling as to what it's like being particularly in the parliamentary chamber, which is like one of the most absurd and bizarre places in the world, is just, it's theatre. It's so far removed from reality. But more than that, it kind of is a reality distortion field. I was actually having this yarn, it would have been about a year or so ago, with Rauri in the chamber, because I was, I think I'm pretty renowned at this point for not being very good at having a poker face. I kind of wear what I'm thinking. And I also have a tendency sometimes to try and heckle when lies are being said in the chamber, which Eugenie Sage would pillory me for. But anyway, Rauri, I was really, really angry, and Rauri was like, you know, we carry our communities into this space. Like, we actually genuinely believe and feel this stuff. Whereas for those guys, it feels a little bit more like a game. And I think just actually understanding that was a big part of going, huh, like, that we perceive the roles that we are playing in this space of parliament in such totally different ways, where every single thing that I do, I feel such a weight of responsibility to represent. Like, I don't think I have imposter syndrome in the traditional sense. Like, you know, you've seen the jokers who do the job that I do. But I do feel consistently like I'm having to check myself and going, do I have the skill set of the person who, like, I think should be doing this role? And, like, honestly, that's something which I'm constantly having to interrogate. Like, I'm just trying my best, guys. I don't really, we're all making it up. But yeah, I think having friends, I think having music, I obviously am the MP for Auckland Central, and I'm very, very lucky to have a lot of awesome music venues who are kind of my safe spaces. And yeah, like having my little sister and her two kids who just so don't care what I do for a job is also nice.
It's humbling.
It is humbling. It is truly. It is truly humbling. Mia's like, Mia, my sister's kid, is like, no, auntie, I'm going to be my assistant and we're going to go and look at all of the bugs and the plants. I'm like, yeah, man, I'm a green.
I feel like that would be borderline a bit refreshing, though.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm very happy to be a follower to a 5-year-old.
I love that. Yeah. But no, another question I just wanted to ask you was, I firmly believe that the arts within New Zealand have not been respected or been given a platform as big enough as, you know, sports or some other academics.
Yeah.
That's the one. And, you know, especially here with RDU, we constantly believe in championing, you know, the alternative and grassroots. But, you know, what are you and the Greens going to do for, you know, for the arts here in Aotearoa?
Really good question. So, I mean, first things first, just even when we're talking about our physical spaces, it is really critical that we're supporting our independent music venues. And, you know, just as we're walking in here, we're having a yarn about independent music venues, Aotearoa, who I've had quite a bit to do with over the last few years, particularly in the context of Auckland Central. But those spaces are critical. That was actually one of the major prompts that got me involved in politics with a big P back in the day. There was a music venue called the King's Arms in Tamaki Makaurau that was closing because, you know, the economy. Have you seen the economy? That was 10 years ago. And I was just like astounded that there didn't seem to be a plan, particularly with council, but let alone, you know, the local MP's involvement and engagement. And for young local musicians to have a space to like get their foot in the door, to build an audience, to like try some weird shit and just, you know, build themselves as people and contribute to the landscape, which again, we tend to celebrate at the kind of extreme end of success when you get that radio play offshore. But where do you think that comes from? And don't you think maybe we could do a bit more of that if we supported the seeds of those things? In a broader kind of economic sense, I think, you know, as again, we were talking about before we came in and had a chat, a lot of my friends are artists in many different iterations. And obviously the reality that I hear from them time and again, which is obviously represented in so much data and statistics, is that it's just nigh on impossible to survive. So for the Greens, this looks like having a guaranteed minimum income for everybody in this country, which we would fund through a wealth tax on the wealthiest 3%, which also simultaneously would allow us to have free GP services, free dental care, free early childhood education, to fix our public transport system, renewable electricity network, and so many other things. The long and short of it is, if we want thriving arts and culture, then we need to ensure that people have time and space, energy and resources to do the arts and culture, let alone the audiences having the discretionary income.